The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
We are back, second hour of the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Statmiller, with you on this 12th day of January 2018. And let me finish this piece up by John Rappaport. He says that, "I assume Hills isn't living in a kibbutz or a commune. I feel certain she owns a home. But as an elite socialist, she's excused. The arbiters who should decide the disposition of all lands for the rest of us deserve their perks. They need their own space in order to think more clearly." Hill asserts that private property ownership isn't ordinary and can't be thought of that in that way. Individuals shouldn't control it, and the free market causes us problems. Well, of course the free market causes problems. If you assume that no one should own more land than anybody else, and yeah, private ownership based on hard work is inefficient. If that means some super government can't take land away for the public good. Hill stops short of saying government should own all the land, but that's where she's going. She continues, "Private land ownership is also a principal instrument of accumulation and concentration of wealth, and therefore contributes to social injustice." You're starting to see the seeds of what the claptrap that's loosed on American streets today? Oh yes, this group is demonstrating in that group, and the asshats just can't figure out who's pulling the strings. Wow. I guess that's not smart money coming from Mr. Soros. It's dumb money. She says, "If unchecked, it may become a major obstacle in the planning and implementation of development schemes." Now, what development schemes could she be referring to? Smart growth? How about let's go back to the United Nations theory that all land in this country is under their control. And we're going to have smart cities and human corridors, and everything outside of that is taboo, and you're not allowed to step foot on it. Wow. So who's the UN to say that the United States, we're the arbiters, and we're here to protect everybody and everything, and, well, we're just going to take your land away from you. That ought to do it. I've repeated this ad nauseum. The United Nations, since its inception, has always been run by the communist. Without fail, every UN Secretary General was a communist. Mark in Florida. Hello, Mark. Mark,
you're there. Hey, John, can you hear me?
Oh, gosh. Boy, that level was up a little high. Yeah, I could hear you.
I'm sorry.
No, it wasn't your fault. You answered the phone and the pot was pushed up. He was looking for you, and he figured out a bad...
I didn't hear the beep, so...
Okay. Well, at any rate, Mark, what's on your mind?
But, the property needs a whole lot more discussion, because I believe that if you can't pick it up and carry it with you, you don't really own it. you should have a right to use it without any, as long as you don't pollute your neighbor, you know, as long as property rights are enforced.
Well, Mark, you're describing overall what's been the net effect on humankind since there's been humankind, is that there is no luggage racks on hearses, and you can't take it with you. Okay? I get that. But are you missing the point here that a lot of rights are tied to property? And yeah, you're
I
not...
I do, but then I look at Boone Pickens, who owns a million acres, and he's sucking everyone's water dry. You know, there's something kind of wrong in there.
Well, yeah, but it's not the property ownership, and you to come at me with the idea that the only thing you really own is what you can pick up and carry with you. Really? Because you're going to trespass on something. Now, hold on here, Mark. You brought this up. Hold on.
Right.
Thank you. This idea that you don't own it if you can't pick it up and carry it. I don't know where you're getting this idea. You know, in this world, you don't get to take anything with you. It's true, you have to die, and you've got to leave that to somebody, a charity, a relative, or if you don't do anything with a will, it rolls back to the state, and they do with it what they will. But the idea that property, you know, I don't give a damn Boone Pickens owns 2 million acres. You know, should he be allowed? I don't know, that's a whole other discussion. But the fact is that private property ensures that a lot of your rights don't go running out the back door of said property. So, you know...
I don't disagree. I don't disagree with that. But like you said, but should Boone Pickens be able to own a million acres and keep everybody else with none?
I don't understand you going in that direction, because I could give a crap less if he owns 1 million or 1 acre. What I'm concerned about is the 1 acre that I own. And you should be as well.
I am. And I'm not your enemy. But Boone Pickens...
I didn't say that you were my enemy. Don't put words in my mouth.
I don't want you to get angry at me.
I'm getting angry because it's a weak-ass argument. That's why I'm getting angry.
Well, that's what I mean. It needs a whole lot more time to discuss, which we don't have here. But if you changed Boone Pickens' names to Uncle Sam, does Uncle Sam get to have that million acres? You know, it's and what I wanted to bring it back to was this began with our founding fabulous fathers, George Washington, Alexander Hamilton, and John Adams, who tried to rid the world of Thomas Jefferson. I mean, there should be an Aaron Burr holiday, because Hamilton had the trigger fixed where he could had less pull on it, so he could shoot faster. And that's why he missed, because he shot so fast. I mean, he was a conniver. So,
Mark, I'm going to let you go. It's evidently been an overstimulating information week for you, and none of what your extrapolations here are making no damn sense to me whatsoever. Thank you for your call. Rest up. Call back next week. Johnny, be good. I'm trying. I really am. But in short, and people missing the whole damn point, damn. Let's rearrange some deck chairs on the RMS Titanic. Yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Social injustice. That familiar theme. Some people might own more land than others. That's not right. That's unjust. There should be no reward for hard work and intelligence. Now, instead, there's only planning from above. The wise demigolds who have our best interest at heart can decide all the uses by which land is put. They can also own huge tracts of lands themselves because they are the gods. But the rest of us must submit to the development schemes they lay out. Only bitter clingers who actually work for a living and strive and make their own way in a world believe in private property. They're for social injustice, and they don't want to give away to the greater sharing. Yeah, Boone Pickens, I don't care if he owns 1 million acres. I only care about my 1 acre, okay? Because if you go after the Boone Pickens of the world, you're going to go after the person that owns the 1 acre. Simply on the principle of private property and ownership. If Boone Pickens paid cash for it, guess what? It belongs to Boone Pickens. And there isn't anything that I should do about that, because if I attack that principle, I'm attacking the guy that's got the one damn acre. Come on, people. You're better than this, aren't you? Finally, Hills states, social justice, urban renewal, and development, the provision of decent dwellings and healthy conditions for the people can only be achieved if land is used in the interest of society as a whole. Kindler and gentler vision. Just launch a plan to give everyone a decent dwelling and healthy conditions. That's how land should be used and thought of. No more private property. Everyone, of course, includes people in limited numbers who come here for anything or anywhere in the world, and they come because they're here to get justice. They should get free housing. They should get health, healthy conditions. They should get free health care. Ask Jerry Brown. No problem. Eventually, everyone gets a 20 by 20 foot square box to live in. What could go wrong? Maybe we can all live in tiny houses on tiny little pieces of land that we really don't own or control, and the government has total dominion over. No, I am more interested in the protection of that one damn acre. Jeez! I know many people, and I'm sure you do too as well, who have worked hard, bought land, built a home, raised children, who would nevertheless applaud Clara Hill's statement. They've succeeded in compartmentalizing their minds. It never occurs to them that if the globalist dream came true, they would wake up one day with their homes and property ripped out from under them. And if they think about it all, they think they have it both ways. They can continue to live as they've been living, but somehow at the same time, social justice will be served. They're in a dream. It's so pretty for them. There's no Iron Hand, there's no Lenin, no Marx, no Stalin. All the land is dotted with lovely little free cottages nestled in valleys, and it's spring. And the trees are flowering. Down a country road is a wheelchair. Comes arch globalist George Soros, cackling and humming and talking on the phone with his broker. He's flanked by bodyguards perched on nearby hills. Snipers are in position just in case threats develop. A young boy approaches him. Soros raises his hand, signaling his hidden shooters to hold their fire. Mr. Soros, Mr. Soros, the boy says, I'm studying civics in school and I'm trying to figure out who everyone is because everyone owns everything. Soros chuckles, that's an advanced lesson, son. You'll learn about it in college. Soros reaches into his pocket, tosses the boy a dime. Go buy yourself an ice cream soda. And remember where you got the money. I stand for charity, good works, hold us all together. What's an ice cream soda, the boy asks. Soros shrugs, I got no idea, it's just something I say. But if you study hard in school, perhaps someday I'll contact your parents, take you under my wing, and teach you how to short currency of a whole nation and make $1 billion in a few weeks, while simultaneously preaching that no one owns anything and everyone owns everything. It's the most beautiful hustle you've ever seen. What's an ice cream soda? Sheldon in Spokane, Washington. Hello, Sheldon.
Well, hello. I'm just calling to rebut my attack when I couldn't defend myself 2 days ago, but you got to look on the positive side. If I would have stayed there and my battery would not have died, you could not have conducted your complete marathon with Ramsey.
Is this somebody put LSD in the one municipal water supply day? Okay, Sheldon, what the hell are you talking about?
My battery went dead 2 days ago, and you gave me a little whatever on the air that I was in the queue, and you worked very hard to line people all up, and you didn't appreciate people just jumping off the ship.
Oh, so you're the one that called me knowing that I was on air, and you called my telephone 2 foot from this microphone? Was that you?
No, I was the one that just, I was ready, I was listening and waiting a long time, and you said, oh, Sheldon, no, I guess he's gone. And then you
okay, so your battery died, Sheldon, and you thought it was important to call up today to tell me that your battery had died and you were in queue too long? Is that what you're saying?
No, I just, you didn't know the complete circumstance, and when you exhaled in disgust, I didn't really mean to cause that much duress in your situation.
It is not like this hasn't happened before, and Sheldon, I don't know if you fell off a cliff, I don't know if your battery died or if you died, okay? So it doesn't really matter, does it?
Well, no, nor does the topic, because you switched pages since then. I was calling you immediately to find out about, you talked about Idaho, and all the people that were, how the states were holding steady or whatever, and you said Idaho was at the top again, and maybe I didn't tune in early enough that time. I was calling to see where Washington placed on that scale you had.
Okay, well, sorry your battery died, Sheldon, and that was not directed personally at you, so don't take it personally, okay?
I'm not. Have a good weekend, John.
Mm-hmm. Is this weekend going to last a week? That's it, huh? That's it for the callers, huh? Wow. All right. All you good people out there, you hear what's happening to the show today? All right. You hear what's going on? Are you busting a gut on the floor? Can you get up from rolling around on the floor laughing and be a sane caller that calls into the show today? Or, you know what, screw it. I'm not taking any more phone calls. I got enough information here. Just shut the phones down. I don't care. Jeez, old Pete. Oh, man. It's funny, Mike. At the top of the hour, I said, okay, we'll open up the phones. And I thought about, you know, I thought, you know what, maybe I shouldn't. And I should have listened to my instinct there. I shouldn't have. Sheldon's taking a... He said he didn't take it personally, but I detected a little, you know, it's not my fault. Well, okay. Whew. This is coming out of True Publica about surveillance, folks. And what did the, did you post that story that I put up about the bill that they just passed to allow the NSA to go scooping up all of our private stuff? You did? Where's that story at? Oh, I had, okay. You know, I mailed that in to you 3.5 hours ago. Did you just now stick it up? Oh, maybe you didn't have the time because you were out in the parking lot with your dead Subaru. Okay, all right, okay. Jeez. Yeah, I say no more calls, so what do I get? No, I don't. No, I don't. No more calls. No, you're not going to be able to save me. The damage has already been done. Thank you for your thought. The House of Representatives cast a deeply disappointing vote today to extend the NSA's spying powers for the next 6 years by a 256-164 margin. Wow. That and Trump absolves the bankers? I'm telling you, 2018 is going to be a great year. Where's that new property at? Jupiter's moons? We'll be back.
All right. We're going to the end of the line. know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
Soon you will be dancing face to face with the limits of ambition and the scars of the marketplace. Welcome to the land of flame and filth.
Wait a minute, before I continue, did I miss something on the Sheldon call from Spokane? Did I miss something there? That he thought it necessary because his battery died while he was waiting in queue. And to not hold him responsible? Am I imagining stuff? Or did somebody slip LSD into our water supply? Am I tripping right now, or is this planet Earth? Mike says to me, he says, John, he says, this whole week has been like this. Well, good. You know what they say, misery loves company. Yeah, right. Anyhow, this is an important topic. Let me calm down here. Because of these votes, I'm talking about the House of Representatives, 256 to 164, voting to leave the NSA surveillance of the Internet. That's likely going to continue. The government is still going to have access to Americans' emails, their chat logs, their browsing history without a warrant. Because of these votes, this surveillance will continue to operate in a dark corner, routinely violating the Fourth Amendment and other core constitutional protections. This is a disappointment to EFF and all of our supporters who for weeks have spoken to defend privacy, and this is a disappointment for the dozens of Congress members who have tried to rein the NSA surveillance in, asking that the intelligence community merely follow the Constitution. We got special circumstance, folks, national security. We can do away with any right that you have under those types of broad scenarios. But they, we can't really tell you what the national threat is because That would be a threat to national security. See how that works? Today's House vote concerned S-139, a bill to extend Section 702, rather, of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. Powerful surveillance authority the NSA relies on to sweep up countless Americans' electronic communications. EFF was vehemently opposed to S-139 for its failure to enact true reform of Section 702. Quit trying to reform it, just get rid of it. This is a government, anytime that you hear reform, nothing's going to change or it probably will get worse. As passed by the House today, the bill endorses nearly all warrantless searches of databases containing Americans' communications collected under Section 702. Provides a narrow and seemingly useless warrant requirement that applies only for searches in some later stage criminal investigations, a circumstance which the FBI itself has said almost never happens. Wow, did the FBI just tell the truth amid a sea of lies? Who the hell can tell anymore? Allows for the restarting of about collection. That's an invasive type of surveillance that the NSA ended last year after being criticized by the FISA court for privacy violations. Sunsets in 6 years, delaying Congress' best opportunity to debate the limits of the NSA surveillance. Now, folks, sadly, the House's approval of S-139 was its second failure today. The first was in the House's inability to pass an amendment through a 183-233 vote that would have replaced the text of S-139 with the text of the USA Rights Act, a bill that the EFF is proud to support. The amendment to replace the text of S-139 with the USA Rights Act was introduced by Representative Justin Amash, Republican out of Michigan, and Zoe Lofgren, Democrat out of California, and included more than 40 co-sponsors from both sides of the aisle. Its defeat came from both Republicans and Democrats. Big surprise. Gambino's and Genovese's running a game. They don't want any interference. Sit down or we'll kill you. Now, S-139 now heads to the Senate, which we expect to vote by January 19th. The Senate has already considered stronger bills to rein in the NSA surveillance, and we call on the Senate to reject this terrible bill coming out of the House. Okay, how about let's just stop the blowing up of foreign countries and using that as an excuse to instill a police state. Why don't we try that? Can we just do that? Notice that narrative is completely lost in the mainstream media, or even people claiming to be conservative. Nothing to see here, just keep moving. Oh, that's old history. That stuff, it's past. We're dealing with the current day crisis, and we're going to protect our phony baloney jobs, harumph. And here we are. Here you are, what? Representing whom? Or what, I should say. Not representing me. I don't even recognize who you people are anymore. And according to the polls, that pretty much covers 85% of the people in this country. Now, I'm sure. What you got there, Mike? What you got?
Well, something before the ID.
Well, we got a break. Mike, if you want to play that clip, we can do that directly after this bottom of the hour break. Just one little thing. Isn't that guy dead? Didn't he commit suicide by taking a high jump off of a tractor? Is that Jim Trafficking? He's going to speak from the grave? I'm all ears.
No reason to get excited. Beam me up.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
homeowners. Are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Hey folks, CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
Into the crowded light, break down, take down, you busted. Shake down, break down, take down, everybody wants into the crowd.
Did you do that? Oh, I've never heard that. I've heard that song 100 times. It's weird. It's like it's been altered. Maybe it's the LSD in our water supplies. You know, there are organizations that have been working overtime to transform this country into a new style democracy. Remember the Council on Foreign Relations? Yeah. For those that who may be confused by the controversy surrounding the new world, one world government, an American concern over giving the UN more power, those unaware of the issues involved, and those wishing more background, I offer the following. Originally presented for an honors class titled Dilemmas of War and Peace at New Mexico State University. The paper was ridiculed and characterized by Dr. Yosef Lapid. He's an acknowledged and locally quoted expert on terrorism in the Middle Eastern affairs. As paranoid, possibly a symptom of mental illness. You may judge for yourself. Citing source data, is a scientific method, but does not seem to apply to conspiracy theories. You're hearing this today, Canada? 1,000 sources may be quoted, yet will not conceive the skeptics, or not convince them of the conceived non-conspiracy. It seems to me that the symptoms of mental illness are on their side. If they refuse to look at evidence, and there are none so blind as those who won't see or will not see, or perhaps something more sinister is at work here, such as the knowledge of the truth that does not want you to know. To be paranoid means to believe in delusions of danger and persecution. If the danger is real and the evidence credible, then it cannot be delusional. To ignore the evidence and hope it cannot be true is more an evidence of mental illness. The issue involves much more than a difference of philosophy or a political viewpoint. Growing up in the midst of the Cold War, our generation were taught that those who attempted to abolish our national sovereignty and overthrow our constitutional form of government were committing acts of treason. If one group is effectively in control of our national governments and multinational corporations, promotes world government through control of media, foundation grants, and education, and controls and guides the issues of the day, then they control most options available. The Council on Foreign Relations and its financial powers behind it have done all of these things. And yes, they do promote the New World Order, as they have for over 70 years. The CFR is a promotional arm of the ruling elite inside the United States. Most influential politicians, academics, media personalities are members, and it uses its influence to infiltrate the New World Order into American life. Its experts write scholarly pieces to be used in decision-making. The academics expound on the wisdom of United World, and the media members disseminate the message. To understand how this most influential people in America came to be members of an organization working purposely for the overthrow of the Constitution and American sovereignty, we have to go back to at least the early 1900s, though the story begins much earlier. That a ruling power elite does indeed control the United States government behind the scenes and has been attested to by many Americans in a position to know. Felix Frankfurter, Justice Supreme Court from 1939 to 1962, he said this: "The real rulers in Washington are invisible and exercise power from behind the scenes." In a letter to an associate dated November 21, 1933, Franklin Roosevelt wrote, "The real truth of the matter is, as you know and I know, that the financial element in a large centers has owned the government ever since the days of Andrew Jackson." Wow. That coming from a communist Jewish fellow from New York, promoting the bankers. Wow, what an admission. Thank you, Frank. February 23rd, 1954, Senator William Jenner, he warned by way of a speech in which he said, in part, "Outwardly, we have a constitutional government. We have operating within our government and political system another body representing another form of government, a bureaucratic elite which believes our Constitution is outmoded." That was 1954. That was 64 years ago. Almost 64 years ago. Baron M.A. Rothschild. He's been often quoted on this. "Give me control over our nation's currency and I care not who makes its laws." Bingo. All that's needed to effectively control a government is to have control of the nation's money. A central bank with a monopoly over the supply of money and credit. This had been done in Western Europe with the creation of privately owned central banks such as the Bank of England. Georgetown professor Dr. Carol Quigley, that was Uncle Bill's mentor, Bill Clinton that is, while at Georgetown, wrote about the goals of the investment bankers who control central banks. And I quote his book, in part, nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole. Controlled in a feudalist fashion by the central banks of the world, acting in concert, by secret agreements arrived at in frequent private meetings and conferences. The Bank of the United States. Andy Jackson, 1816 to 1936, an early attempt at an American central bank was abolished by Andrew Jackson, who believed that it threatened the nation. He wrote this: "Nothing less than to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole, controlled in a feudalist fashion by the central banks of the world, acting in concert by secret agreements, arrived at frequent private meetings and conferences." That's what he said. Goes on to say that the bold effort the present bank had made to control the government, the distress that it had wantonly produced, are all but premonitions of the fate that awaits the American people, should they be deluded in the perpetuation of this institution or the establishment of another one like it. Thomas Jefferson, "The central bank is an institution of the most deadly hostility existing against the principles and form of our Constitution. If the American people allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all of their property until their children will wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered." Doesn't that kind of describe the situation in America today? Not kind of, not sort of. It does. "The U.S. managed to do without a central bank until early in this century, when, according to Congressman Charles Lindbergh Sr., he said the money trust caused the 1907 panic and thereby forced Congress to create a National Monetary Commission. Headed by none other than Senator Nelson Aldrich, father-in-law of John D., Rockefeller, that is, the commission recommended creation of a central bank. Though unconstitutional, as only the Congress shall have the power to coin money, regulate the value thereof, Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution. The Federal Reserve Act was passed in December of 1913, ostensibly to stabilize the economy and prevent further panics, but as Lindbergh warned Congress, he said this: "This act establishes the most gigantic trust on earth, the invisible government by the money power proven to exist by the money trust investigation will be legalized. The Great Depression and numerous recessions later, it's obvious that the Federal Reserve produces inflation and the federal debt whenever it desires, but not the stability factor." Congressman Louis Mafagna, Louis McFadden, House Committee on the Banking and Currency Chairman, he was there from 1920 to 1931, he stated this: "When the Federal Reserve Act was passed, the people of these United States did not perceive that the world banking was being set up here. A superstate controlled by the international bankers and industrialists acting together to enslave the world. Every effort has been made by the Fed to conceal its powers, but the truth is, the Fed has usurped the government." You know, I'm sure this is just balderdash. None of these people mattered. The very people on the inside seeing what was happening and then warning all of us. I'm sure that wasn't research by a validated Gold Star certified historian. Man. Although called federal, the Federal Reserve System, privately owned by member banks, makes its own policies, and is not subject to oversight by Congress or the President. As the overseer and supplier of the reserves, the Fed gave banks access to public funds, which enhanced their lending capacity. Peter Kershaw in the Economic Solutions lists the 10 major shareholders of the Federal Reserve Bank systems as the Rothschilds, London and Berlin, Lazard Brothers of Paris, Israel Schiff of Italy, Kuhn Loeb and Company of Germany, Warburg, Hamburg, and Amsterdam, the Lehman Brothers, New York, Goldman Sachs, New York. According to D.V. Kidd, Why a Bankrupt America, the Federal Reserve pays the Bureau of Engraving and Printing approximately $23 for each 1,000 notes printed. 10,100 notes, that equals $1 million, would thus cost the Federal Reserve a whopping $230. Federal dollars, that is. As Lindbergh put it, the new law will create inflation whenever the trusts want inflation. They can unload the stocks on the people at high prices during the excitement and then bring on a panic and then buy them back at low prices. The day of reckoning is only a few years removed. Well, that day came in 1929 when the stock market crashed and the Great Depression ensued. One of the most important powers given to the Fed was the right to buy and sell government securities and provide loans to member banks so they might also purchase them. This provided another built-in mechanism for profits for the bank. If the government debt was increased, all that was needed was a method to pay off the debt. This was accomplished through the passage of the income tax of 1913. A national income tax was declared unconstitutional in 1895 by the Supreme Court, so a constitutional amendment was proposed in Congress by none other than Senator Nelson Aldrich. As presented to the American people, it seemed reasonable enough. Income tax is only 1% of an income under $20,000, with the assurance that it would never increase. Since it was graduated, the tax would soak the rich, but the rich had other plans, already devising a method of protecting wealth. As described by Gary Allen in his 1976 books, The Rockefeller File, he said, by the time the 16th Amendment had been approved by the states, the Rockefeller Foundation was in full operation. About the same time that Judge Kenesaw Landis was ordering the breakup of Standard Oil monopoly, John D. not only avoided taxes by creating four great tax-exempt foundations, he used them as repositories for his divested interest, made his assets non-taxable so that they might be passed down through generations without estate and gift taxes. Each year, the Rockefellers can dump up to half of their incomes into their pet foundations and deduct the donations from their income tax. Exchanging ownership for the control of wealth, foundations are also a handy means for promoting interests that benefit the wealthy. Millions of foundation dollars have been donated to causes such as promoting the use of drugs while degrading the preventative medicine. As many drugs are made from coal tar derivatives, both oil companies and drug manufacturers' concerns are the main beneficiaries. With a means to loan enormous sums to the government, the Federal Reserve, a method to repay the debt by way of income tax, and an escape from taxation for the wealthy, quote-unquote foundations, all that remained was an excuse to borrow money. By some happy coincidence, in 1914, World War I began, and after American participation, the national debt rose from $1 billion to $25 billion. Old Woody Woodrow Wilson was elected president in 1913, beating incumbent William Howard Taft, who had vowed to veto legislation establishment, the establishment, rather, of a central bank to divide a Republican vote and elect the relatively unknown Wilson, J.P. Morgan and Company poured money into the candidacy of Toady Roosevelt and his Progressive Party. Oh, you didn't know that he switched parties? Another Roosevelt. According to an eyewitness, Wilson was brought to the Democratic Party headquarters in 1912 by none other than Bernard Baruch, a wealthy banker. He received an indoctrination course from those he met and in return agreed, if elected, to support the projected Federal Reserve and income tax and listen to advice in case of war in Europe and on the composition of his cabinet. Wilson's top advisor during his two terms was a man by the name of Colonel Edward M. House. Mandel was his middle name. House's biographer, Charles Seymour, called him the unseen guardian angel of the Federal Reserve Act, helping it to guide it through Congress. Another biographer wrote that House believed the Constitution, product of the 18th century minds, was thoroughly outdated, and the country would be better off if the Constitution would be scrapped and rewritten. Wow. House wrote a book entitled Philip Drew, Administrator. Published anonymously in 1912, the hero, Philip Drew, rules America and introduces radical changes, such as a graduated income tax, a central bank, and a League of Nations. He was telling you the story by proxy. World War I produced both a large national debt, huge profits for those who had backed Wilson. Baruch was appointed head of the War Industries Board, where he exercised dictatorial power over the national economy. He and the Rockefellers were reported to have earned $200 million. I'm talking about $200 million back then. During the war, Wilson backer Cleveland Dodge sold munitions to the Allies, while J.P. Morgan loaned them hundreds of millions with the protection of U.S. entry into the war. While profit was certainly a motive, the war was also useful to justify the notion of world government. William Hoare reveals in his Architects of Conspiracy that during the 1950s, government investigators examining the records of the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, a longtime promoter of globalism, found that several years before the outbreak of World War I, the Carnegie trustees were planning to involve the U.S. in a general war to set the stage for world government. The main obstacle was that the Americans did not want any involvement in European wars. Some kind of incident, such as the explosion of the battleship Maine, which provoked the Spanish-American War, would have to be provided as provocation. This occurred when the Lusitania, carrying 128 Americans on board, was sunk by the German submarine, and anti-German sentiment was aroused. When war was declared, U.S. propaganda portrayed all Germans as Huns and fanged serpents, and all Americans opposing the war as traitors. What was not revealed at the time, however, was that the Lusitania was transporting war munitions to England, making it a legitimate target for the Germans. Even so, they had taken out large ads in the New York papers asking that Americans not take passage on the ship. So here are the owners of the Lusitania running ads in the American papers saying, don't come on the damn boat. They did anyhow. Now, this evidence seems to point to a deliberate plan to have the ship sunk by the Germans. Colin Simpson, author of the Lusitania, wrote that Winston Churchill, head of the British Admiralty during the war itself, had ordered a report to predict the political impact if a passenger ship carrying Americans was sunk. German naval codes had been broken by the British, who knew approximately where all the U-boats were near the British Isles. According to Simpson, Commander Joseph Kenworthy, a British naval intelligence, stated, the Lusitania was deliberately sent at considerable reduced speed into an area where the U-boat was known to be waiting, and the escorts withdrawn. Thus, even though Wilson had been re-elected in 1916 with the slogan, he kept us out of the war, America soon found itself fighting a European war. Actually, Colonel House had already negotiated a secret agreement with England, committing the U.S. to the conflict, it seems that the American public had little to say in the matter. And if you did say anything, yeah, you were a traitor. With the end of the war and the Versailles Treaty, which required severe war reparations from Germany, the way was paved for a leader in Germany such as Adolf Hitler. How'd that work out? Wilson brought to the Paris Peace Conference his famous 14 points, with point 14 being a proposal for a General Association of Nations, which was to be the first step towards the goal of one world government, the League of Nations. Wilson's official biographer, Ray Stannard Baker, revealed that the League was not Wilson's idea, not a single idea. In the covenant of the League was the original with the president. Colonel House was the author of the covenant, and Wilson had merely rewritten it to conform to his own phraseology. The League of Nations was established, but it and the plan for world government eventually failed because the U.S. Senate would not ratify the Versailles Treaty. Pat Robertson, in the book New World Order, states that Colonel House, along with other internationalists, realized that America would not join any scheme for world government without a change in public opinion. After a series of meetings, it was decided that an Institute of International Affairs with two branches in the United States and England would be formed. The British branch became known as the Royal Institute of International Affairs, with leadership provided by members of the Round Table, begun in the late 1800s by none other than Cecil Rhodes. The Round Table aimed to federate the English-speaking people of the world and bring it under their rule. The Council on Foreign Relations was incorporated as the American branch in New York on July 29, 1921. And founding members included Colonel House and such potentates as international banking as J.P. Morgan, John D. Rockefeller, Paul Warburg, Otto Kahn, and Jacob Schiff. The same clique which had engineered the establishment of the Federal Reserve System. The founding president of the CFR was John W. Davis, J.P. Morgan's personal attorney, while the vice president was Paul Cravath, also representing the Morgan's interests. Professor Carol Quigley characterized the CFR as a front group for J.P. Morgan and Company in association with the very small American Roundtable Group. Over time, Morgan's influence was lost to the Rockefellers, who found that one world government fit their philosophy as business very well. As John D. Rockefeller Sr. had said, competition is a sin, and global monopoly fits their needs as they grew internationally. Anthony Sutton, a research fellow at the Hoover Institution of War, Revolution and Peace at Stanford, wrote of this philosophy. He says, while monopoly control of industries was once the objective of J.P. Morgan and J.D. Rockefeller, by the late 19th century, the inner sanctums of Wall Street understood the most efficient way to gain an unchallenged monopoly was to go political and make society go to work for the monopolist under the name of public good and public interest. Wow. Well, folks, capping a completely crappy week, kicking off this new year, well, good part of it, we will endeavor to pursue to gather our stuff and be back with you Monday. Oh, it's Martin Lucifer King Day Monday, isn't it? Banks are closed. Hallelujah. Well, they're not really closed. Thanks for being here. We'll see you Monday.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigraLeaf. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigraLeaf migraine formula. MigraLeaf is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigraLeaf for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life, or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354. Or visit MIG911.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.